No, dude, could you imagine getting a pack of all red tasting Starburst?
Do you know that they
Just
do
talking
sell those
about
though? What?
disgusting.
You can just
Yeah, they
buy like
sell.
single flavor Starbursts?
It's all the reds, so it's like different flavors, but they're all red flavor. Like the fret,
Oh.
I don't know how to describe it.
Why?
That's
Wait,
kind of
why wouldn't you
retarded,
do
but
pink? Pink's way better.
red's the most requested flavor, I'm assuming. I don't know. Like,
No, pink,
I wasn't
right?
on the marketing team of Starburst when they were like, "All right, we need to pick one color. Fuck
People
all the rest of them."
who eat only red Starbursts are narcs, okay? Flat out.
Can you just like tweet that as a to start an internet war of just being like, listen here, narc.
Hold
People who eat
on. Flat
red,
out.
people who eat red Starburst be snitching, man.
Hey everybody, welcome to Checkpoint AFK, one of the top shows where nerds talk about everything that happens away from the keyboard. I am your host, Norris Howard, and we have some special guests right now. We have a very special event that we wanted to let you guys know about before we started the show properly. We got Ryan and Allie. They're coming to you from Axis Replay. They have a really cool event going down on Juneteenth, and we'll let Allie talk all about it, because if you don't know what Juneteenth is, you got a little bit of an issue. So Allie, what is this event all about going down on the 19th?
So actually, Norris, it's really interesting that you said that because I did not know what Juneteenth was, embarrassingly enough. And this was something that we really wanted to share with the world, and educate people on what the holiday is. So the celebration of Juneteenth actually comes from Freedom Day, from slavery in the U.S. And it was on June 19th, because that was when the declaration happened, in Texas, after 2.5 years after emancipation.
Yeah.
So, just that aspect alone kind of brought, I mean, it really brought tears to my eyes, like even just researching more about it. But with everything that's going on in the world today, we thought that it would be really a symbolic message, to be able to come together in solidarity, as a gaming culture for social justice. And so the event that we're holding on Juneteenth is really a collaboration of so many brands, companies, players, gamers, influencers across the board, just to really come together and say we are making a stand. And great, we've put out messaging on our social media, but now we're ready to take action. Right. And so that is really what this event is all about.
That's awesome. And Ryan, what can we expect from the event on the 19th? What sort of event are we talking about, and how excited are you guys for it?
Super excited, man, without a doubt. And so kind of just to echo Ali's sentiments, really what you're going to expect on the 19th is a one event broken up into two. So essentially, the first half was really going to be centered around education and really highlighting the importance and significance of what Juneteenth is. We're going to discuss like why voter registration is so important and how ways that we can avoid voter suppression. And then ultimately, to kind of round it out, we're going to talk around more around African Americans and minorities within the industry, right? How do you pursue careers, game development, content creation, et cetera? And we really want to showcase this, right? We're going to be front page on Twitch. So we're going to have a ton of good visibility. And then also just to kind of spice things up, right? Our current president made an announcement that he is going to be giving a rally at the exact same day and time in the same city where this extravaganza took place, being Black Wall Street. So for us, right, it's like, how do we show the biggest level of love and support on a day where they're intentionally like trying to provide the opposite of that, right? So this
Yeah.
is like taking a step further. Allie and I are having all these backdoor conversations on like, how do we really amplify our message to kind of distract and really provide another avenue and medium for people to tune into on this day. So man, we're super excited. I cannot thank you all enough from Beasley to come on board and actually support us. So just thank you, man. We really, really grateful for this opportunity.
I think
Yeah.
one of the big words that I pull out of that is you said love. You know what I mean? Like I feel like that's a very good word to describe not only what you guys are doing here, but what you're hoping to like give and get, right? Like love isn't one of those things that just happens in a vacuum. It has to be a two-way thing. So with an event like this, I think the positivity that can come out of it is great. And especially like you mentioned, you know, in today's times, there's nothing better than love, right?
Yeah. Absolutely. And, you know, I mean, with the help of you guys and getting us on Checkpoint, but and also all of our partners like FaZe Clan and getting it out to their 130 million, you know, fans and followers, in addition to even governmental agencies like Invest Atlanta and Events DC, who handles the CVB for Washington, D.C., they're all involved. I mean, one of the things that we did was when I went to all of our partners, I said, look, there are no donations. We're not asking for money. We're not raising funds. Like, literally, I want you to put your name on this. Right, put your stamp on it and your brand. And it's been really interesting to see. We've got WeWorks, Intel, Hyper. I mean, so many of our partners have just jumped right in to support the cause, but not just that, but also to provide a message of action, what they are going to do as a company and as a brand and as people and part of, you know, humanity.
Awesome. So where can we find the stream, at what time, and you know, give us the basic information on where we can find more about Access Replay and you guys.
So just go to Juneteenth.gg. That's Juneteenth.gg. We'll have all the information and all the links of all of the partners who are hosting the stream, as well as the, you know, where it's all going to be distributed. And if you want to know more about Access Replay, accessreplay.com.
Awesome. So thank you guys so much for joining
thank
us.
You.
It's a really great event, and there's names on there that I'm not going to reveal because I haven't, you know, necessarily gotten the green light to be able to do that. But we are very happy to be able to signal boost this and share this out. Juneteenth is one of the most important days in African-American history, and we are very grateful and very excited to help you guys out with this and to do as much as we can to bring more attention to this great day and really get more information out there about African-American causes, voter registration, and the sort. So thank you so much, guys, and we look forward to seeing you on the 19th.
Yeah, thank you.
Have
you.
A good one.
Out of the loop, here's your Checkpoint XP esports quick hit.
This week we got our first look at EA's newest Star Wars game, Squadrons. Invoking feelings of older titles like the Nintendo 64's Rogue Squadron, this new title focuses on 5v5 dogfighting in spaceships. It's already got people wondering if there could be an esports component to it, bringing esports to that galaxy far, far away. I'm not sure I'm willing to go that far, but even I'll admit this is the right type of format for an esport to emerge. Time will tell.
Need to stay up to date? Check out CheckpointXP.com for the latest in esports and gaming news.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking 5 of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on 5 we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top 5? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Sorry, and welcome right. to Checkpoint XP. This is us.
Illuminating.
Where
we start a show and talk about nothing for 20 minutes.
That's right. Checkpoint AFK, here we are, joined by a very, very special guest. Brandon Braithwaite is joining us. You know him from the Grassroots Podcast. You know him from the litany of written works he has provided the internet. I'm super excited to have this guy joining us. Brandon, thank you so much for joining us here on Checkpoint AFK.
No worries, man. I appreciate you guys reaching out and bringing him on the show.
By the way, isn't it always nice to get podcasters on the show? We obviously have our background in podcasting, so it's when you talk to a fellow podcaster, it always feels good.
Yeah, for sure. I think only just now stepped into the podcasting world, but I'm glad you guys appreciate, like, brought me into the fold.
Oh yeah,
appreciate that.
Oh yeah, and I mean, listen, because the illest thing about podcasters, right, is that they recognize that 80% of every podcast is bullshit. Like 80% of it. There's like 20% factual information that somebody may actually take away from it. The rest is just farting around and making jokes. So yep. That is the tenor of our conversations always on Checkpoint AFK. So we are happy that you now understand what you've gotten yourself into. And if you would like to eject, I completely understand.
No, I'm in it for the long haul now at this point.
You know what? We haven't had that person yet. The one who, like, we get through like the pre-show and they just drop the Discord call and we never hear from them again. We haven't had that yet.
It's coming.
I'll call you guys back.
Yeah. Correct. They never call back.
I am surprised based on every type of show that we have had and all the different types of people we've had on the show. Yeah, I am very surprised no one has bailed very, very quickly on us. So I'm just happy to have you. And so, you know, Brandon, I want to talk very briefly about you. You know, how did you get into gaming and like what are you playing right now?
So for me, the way I got it, at least into the gaming space, was through esports. So I used to work at Best Buy, you know, just doing the grind after college. And then, you know, I got fired. And I was just like, all right, I don't want to go back.
This is a very matter-of-factly, I got fired.
Yeah, I got fired. I don't want to go into detail. I just got fired. But I didn't want to go back into the retail world. So I was like, let me jump back into my film background and start to actually work there. So I initially just wanted to just do regular, you know, PA work, stuff like that. So I saw just like this mysterious production assistant job. It didn't really say specifically where it was at, but it just said, oh, you know, we need a PA who has like a background in esports. And like, I didn't work directly in esports at that time. The only connection I had was probably to just like, you know, I knew a lot about League of Legends and I knew a lot about the FGC. So I go to the job, and then lo and behold, the job is Bleacher Report. And it's like,
shut the fuck up.
Yeah, really. So it hits me. I'm like, oh, this is Bleacher Report. Like, we're like, all right, cool, cool. I mean, they could have said that in the beginning, but I guess they wanted to keep it low key, but I don't know. Right, either way, right. Like, I did the interview with Chris Giandoni. Actually, he did a lot of work for G4 TV. They actually brought him on to be like the executive producer for a show they wanted to do called eStream. And the show was specifically taking just regular esports news and kind of just like projecting it for the Bleacher Report audience. It didn't work out too well because they never found a way to transition it. But it was just it's kind of the start of like how do I put it? It's the start of people recognizing that esports needed kind of a TV or like a live daily show kind of route.
That so, production value.
Right, exactly. So there I worked with Michelle Morrow and Malik Forte. Actually, he was on last week, I think.
Yes, he was. Friend of the show, Malik Forte.
Yeah, friend of the show. Exactly.
So yeah, I worked with those guys. Then the show ended. Then I jumped more to doing like esports journalism because I was like, all right, yeah. Well, I've dipped my toe in the esports world. I like it. Let me just work with, like, I worked with Double Tap, and then I worked with Esports Observer doing kind of different esports things with them. And that was kind of my sabbatical of like learning the full scope of esports. Yeah. From there, I transitioned to working with Cheddar, and that's where I met like Aaron and, you know, I don't know if you guys know Jimmy Mondel, but that's where we started doing the Cheddar Esports show. And I was one of the producers there. Again, Chris Giandoni was there. Another guy who worked at MLG was there. His name was Colin Foley. So we kind of built a team where our understanding was that the way we wanted to do the show was very personality driven. So obviously we brought in Aaron, we had in Jimmy, and we wanted to make sure that this was the esports show. And I think we accomplished it to some degree. And then unfortunately COVID happened and, you know, the rest is history.
Yeah. Yeah. And unfortunately that's what's happening with a lot of products out here, but you know what? Checkpoint reigns eternal and we will keep this thing moving. I don't care how anybody feels, flat out, we will continue no matter what. But we got some really cool conversations coming up, the last thing, you say you're a League of Legends and the FGC guy. I got to ask you this one last question, dude. Is EVO even going to fucking work this year? Like, is it even going to be a thing, man?
So, weird thing. I'm actually working on an article about that. Here's my thing. I think EVO is going to work, but I think a lot of people's expectations about what EVO should be is gonna make it feel like it didn't work.
Boom, like, exactly.
Kind of throw a tournament that's going to be global, because they've already announced that they're doing it in pretty much every region, like, with the exception of, like, I think the Middle East, they don't have a region.
Yeah, the Middle East is the one that's out.
And then South America, too. But to kind of hold a big, huge, open tournament, you know, online is unprecedented. I mean, I know Smash had an event that did it, but it didn't get as much traction, and also because Smash's netcode is pretty trash.
That netcode is trash.
Yeah, exactly. People trashed people trashed the event, so it's like they almost like blanked out on it. And EVO was smart in that they were very specific about these are the games we want to have because they have good netcode. And I don't know what they're going to be doing with the other games. They haven't announced it yet, but my assumption is probably whatever announcements they would have made at EVO is probably what's going to happen there. So I think people, this is the first real huge online tournament for the FGC. I know other people have been doing it, but no one has done it on this scale, like, globally. So it's going to be, I think it's going to be successful. It's just not going to be what people are expecting from an EVO.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll be right back, guys, with more AFK, where we got some really cool conversations about the police. That's right. The police. We'll be back.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone. BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
Hey guys, I'm Jake.
And I'm Robbie Landis.
And we're the hosts of The Owl's Nest, giving you that high-level perspective of the Overwatch League, checking out the news every single week.
That's right. You can find us every Friday at CheckpointXP.com and over our YouTube. You can also find an audio version on Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you find your podcasts.
Checkpoint AFK, we are back one more game with everything away from the keyboard, including a conversation about the police. Yeah, I know that sounds a little bit weird, but hear me out, okay? As gamers, we have played a lot of video games where you either play as or against the police. And I wanted to talk to you guys because obviously there is a ginormous conversation around police reform right now in the wake of the George Floyd protests, and really an overdue conversation about this, particularly as it pertains to the African-American community. But I wanted to look at this from the angle of video games, right? Everybody always talks about how video games glorify violence. Yeah, that's halfway true. It doesn't necessarily make violent people, but we'd all be lying if we said that video games aren't kind of violent across the board for the most part. But I want us to look specifically at the police. So we're going to go around the horn, and I want you guys to tell me, what is your first snap off the rip? Tell me a video game with police in it right now, off the rip.
Grand Theft Auto.
Easy.
There it is. No more.
I would say like a mafia game, like you can, any of the older, like, you know, you're the boot runner or bootleggers. That one's all about, you know, outrunning cops or whatnot.
Okay, so GTA. You just said the same thing. Stop talking. Anyway, yeah. Brandon.
Mine's gonna be Jet Set Radio.
Good choice.
Ooh, Jet Set Radio. Oh, yeah. Three games of which all of you guys said the cops were the antagonists. All three games. So I want to explore that because there was an article that came out literally right before we started recording the show from Imran Khan at Kotaku saying that video games needs to reckon with how they depict the police. And I find that to be a very interesting topic because video games traditionally do put you in an antagonistic relationship with police officers. They are usually who you are running away from, fighting, combating, or trying to stop corrupt cops. So I want to, you know, talk a little bit about different sort of police officers in video games. And I broke them down to three categories. We got positive, negative, and ayo, what the fuck? So we're going to start with positive depictions of police officers. I will name a game and you will, you guys will say, you know, how you felt about how the police were depicted in that game.
Okay.
So the first game with a positive depiction of the police is a very recent game, Spider-Man from PS4. Spider-Man from PS4. How do you guys feel about the depiction of the police in that game?
I think it was, it has to be on brand for Spider-Man though, right? Like looking inside the context of Marvel and what Disney would allow, there's not going to be any, you know what I mean? Like hella corrupt cops running around in a Disney movie in the next 40 years. So, you know, like it's okay. I think it was a very like, you know how when you watch movies as a young kid, you can watch them again as an adult and get a totally different message out of them. I think this is just like a certain kind of like polished up version of what police officers are in the world of Spider-Man. Like if we're talking about real Spider-Man in today's Brooklyn, he's not, you know what I mean? Like he's not being like, oh, what up cops? Like let's hang out. They would beat the shit out of him. So, and especially if it's Miles Morales swinging around, like I want to see the depiction of cops in the new PS5 Spider-Man, right? With Miles Morales as Spider-Man. That's more interesting to me than kind of like the fluffy look of what cops do.
If the cops completely change up and they're just like, yo, get the fuck out of here, you mutt.
Yes.
But that's going to be a real question that the creators are going to have to answer with Miles Morales as Spider-Man is what political take do you want with that? Because no matter how you depict your police officers in that game, it's going to be a political take. So you better figure out what message you want to send if you're developing that game right now.
Yeah, so Brandon, as the guy well-versed with New York, what do you think about the depiction of the police in Spider-Man?
I mean, it's kind of just like the cookie cutter.
Yeah.
This is the kid's dream of what the cops are. And it's unfortunate because, you know, Spider-Man is kind of like that hero that usually a lot of younger kids look up to as like, the sole, how do I put it? He's like the sole one guy that can do almost, feel like he can do almost anything. And it's like, for him to be like opposing the cops in any way, it would just seem weird to their fantasy of like, you know, I want to grow up to be a police officer one day. So, I mean, the unfortunate thing is I can't really think of any Spider-Man media like comics or anything where he's like completely against the cops, but I mean, I don't think a video game is going to be the place where we kind of like have that discussion, at least not with Spider-Man.
Well, yeah, not Spider-Man for sure.
I think it's interesting, too, because it comes down to one of the fundamental problems of showing police officers in a superhero game. You have to show the police either as being incredibly corrupt and therefore inept, or as just being incredibly inept and unable to help themselves. Otherwise, there's not really much need for a superhero.
Yeah, exactly.
No, I think that's a great point. And so our second game that has a pretty positive depiction of the police is a game, L.A. Noir. Now, here's the thing, and the reason why I say it's a positive depiction. This is a game in which you play pretty much a beat cop starting out. You're a guy who starts out at the lowest totem pole of being a detective. I think there's a brief sidebar where you are a street cop. And you kind of go through doing actual investigative cop work. There is not a lot of video games where you have to go through the minutiae of cop work. So for those of you who have played L.A. Noir, how did you feel about that depiction of police? None of y'all played it.
I played. Like, I would say that it's a lot more... again, like, we're talking about fantasy depictions of cops in just the sense that, like, gumshoe detectives don't exist anymore. And I don't think they even really existed to begin with, where it's like, you know, he goes and he, oh, it looks like the cigarette ashtray has moved 2 inches to the right, and therefore it was Smiley Jones. Like, that shit doesn't happen. You know what I mean? Like, if you look at actual crime statistics of how crimes are solved, like, the majority of them are people committing crimes against other people that they already know, right? Like, so it's not you to, it's kind of a problem I have with Batman as well, since we were just still talking about superheroes, is like,
no, Batman is top cop. What you talking about?
But it's the fantasy of, like, police officers, for the majority, as they're depicted in, like, CSI crime shows or video games or movies, are, like, again, these gumshoe detectives that, like, have these ultra Sherlock brains to where they use, you know, like, clues and hints to put together this mystery, when the majority of cop work is, like, shit that other groups of people should be doing, like dealing with people with mental health issues, dealing with people that live on the streets, dealing with domestic disputes. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, there's very little detective work in the sense of, like, piecing together an almighty narrative of, like, a big crime syndicate. Like, listen, I wish that shit happened, because then it would mean that that cops wouldn't harass just people on the street, right? They'd be dealing with, like, kingpins and taking down international crime rings. But that's the top 5% of cop work. The bottom 95% is just, you know, bullshit. Like, I mean, I watched the series, what is it? It's the Monopoly thing, McMillions. Oh, there McMillions, we go. Yeah. The McMillions.
Monopoly thing.
No, seriously, they no, solved the crime ring on the Monopoly pieces. But the thing is, that was done by the fucking FBI. Like, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, it's a high profile crime, but it's still, like, in the grand scheme of things, kind of small potatoes. So, like, if that's what the fucking FBI is doing, there is nobody in, you know, Temecula, California, or Biloxi, Iowa, or whatever small town that you want to deal with. Those cops aren't cracking, you know, big time mysteries. I just think it's cute, it's cool, but it's fantasy.
I see what you mean, and I am now taking the conch away from you, Rick, because we have a guest. And so, you know, Brandon, real quick, you know, LA Noire, did you get a chance to play it? How do you feel about it?
So I didn't get to play it, but I do know the game because of two things: the doubt, and then, like, the gif
of the doubt face.
Yeah, the doubt and the gif of him falling over. But from what I've seen from the games being played, it's a very specific type of game, right? Like, so
yes,
it kind of almost helped that it was a cop kind of, like, you know, old school, you know, detective kind of word, because now you're like, okay, like, if you want to make a puzzle game, like, we can use this as the motif, like, he's a cop. So it's like, it makes it, I guess, a little more interesting than just having someone who's just randomly trying to solve puzzles. I think it's just, for me, I didn't play it, but I mean, if it is a positive description, depiction of the police, fine. But I think it's just a part of a toolbox of, like, this is the type of gameplay that we wanted to have.
Not so much trying to have a realistic depiction
of them. Yeah.
It really was just like a big tech demo for Rockstar's new facial capture technology. But so very quickly, I'm going to just glance over these negative depictions of police, because these are very easy to pick out. Obviously, you got GTA and Red Dead Redemption as other Rockstar games that have police in them.
Yep.
Robbie said it here in our chat. In San Andreas, you get kidnapped by Samuel Jackson, a.k.a. Officer Tenpenny. and that unit was the, you know, completely corrupt, and they were antagonists for most of the game. And so that's very obvious. Red Dead Redemption, you get shot up by the feds at the end of it. I don't care if that's a spoiler, whatever. But, you know, obvious antagonists. And so we're going to go to my favorite section very quickly, which is, hey, yo, what the fuck? And I define that by hyper-violent, chaotic, good ends justify the means type of policing. And I'm going to just run down this list. So you got games like Max Payne, Die Hard Arcade, the Resident Evil series, Streets of Rage 4, Virtual Cop, Crackdown, Battlefield Hardline.
Infamous.
Almost every depiction of police in video games is of people who can literally go around and shoot the fuck out of anybody they care, out of anybody on the street, and have no repercussions whatsoever. That is how police are depicted in video games, overwhelmingly.
So accurately?
Facts. Facts. And so I pull out Battlefield Hardline in particular, in, you know, a game like Streets of Rage 4 as well, if you played it, where not only do you fight the police are NPCs that beat up other NPCs in the game, which I think was a statement. But out of any of those games that you guys have played, you know, do any of these cops or any of these characters stand out to you as like, yeah, that person probably shouldn't have been a police officer?
I think when you look at a lot of the games that you just mentioned, so often they are like what the guards in Morrowind are. They are the throwaway unit that is there to ensure you don't just go on a killing spree in the early game until you get to the late game and you can kill the guards. Like, they're not even, I like, sure, they slap police on them because it's something we recognize, but it's like they're just there to be an artificial wall, kind of, which is a weird way of talking about people. But like,
I mean more so in terms of like the protagonists of the game, right? Because like somebody like Max Payne shouldn't be a cop, flat out.
Yeah,
agreed.
John McClane shouldn't be a cop. And yet, these are people who are propped up as the best of us.
But I think it's because, like, in the 90s, there was a stereotype that emerged of, like, you know, Americans love bad boy cops who play by their own rules. You know, like, that's the thing. And I think in that, it kind of excuses a lot of people's assessment of who a person is, because they go, oh, he's doing what needs to be done. He's playing by his own rules. Like, that's the thing that excuses a lot of horrible shit. Like, John McClane is a real cop. I hope he would be fired. You know what I mean? Like, he would never fucking exist in the real world of that job. So, like, I don't know. Like, I think the question then becomes, is it the fault of the developers for creating kind of a class of character, like Callie said, that's what cops do, or the Max Payne cops, or is it on the consumers who, like, still buy shit like that, you know what I mean? Like, who still are super into having cops just be able to do stuff without impunity.
Or with impunity.
Yeah. I think for me, it is kind of going back to, just like you were saying, like the 90s style of, like, you know, the cop who has to go above the law to go beyond the law to make sure that the law is, like, preserved. And unfortunately, I think for game developers, it's like, if you want to kind of have a story that does that, the best person to pick is a cop, right? Like, if you pick a soldier and you just pick the soldier like that, it's very strange, because, like, we're told that soldiers are, you know, these rigid, you know, very strict, like, they're following the law, you know, following the rules, going about it in a very strategic manner. And it's like, you can't really have an individualism, like, type of game with, like, a soldier, unless it's like a soldier who, like, is going haywire and going off of his unit and stuff like that. I think the cop kind of fits that depiction more because of the way our culture has kind of depicted them in the media.
Well, that's kind of the unfortunate thing, right? Is, like, if we saw a movie about what a cop was actually supposed to be, they'd be doing paperwork for half of it, and no one really wants to watch that movie. But isn't that, like, the other side of that comes in when we start seeing, like, you mentioned, like, John McClane and Max Payne. They shouldn't be cops. You're absolutely correct. However, and here's the problem, if they're not cops, we all go, oh my God, they're vigilantes. Why aren't people taking them down? They can't live a normal life. But because they're cops, we, in our mind, justify, like, oh, well, they could do something like this and get away with it. And, like, that's a huge problem. They shouldn't be able to get away with this. They should be treated as vigilantes or really murderers as soon as they start doing shit like this.
Yeah, and my main thing about this, you know, whole conversation that I really want to hit on is the fact that people consume this media, whether it be films, whether it be video games, and many of them also go out and be cops.
Yeah.
And so that, again, you know, Brandon, to your question, is who does it fall onto, the consumer or the developer? Is art imitates life, imitates art. You know, what, there's no way to really say who is the most responsible for it. But I just think a game like LA Noire was really great at really at least hitting on the fact that here are some people trying to at least do good and going about it in a very sort of measured, methodical way. But as you can see, only two people in the whole damn show played the game because that shit's boring. Okay, nobody wants to watch that. We want to see Max Payne dive over the table on his John Woo movie shit with two guns and shoot everybody in the whole room before he hits the ground. That is what we want our cops to do. And unfortunately, that is translated into real life. Yeah. So that's going to be that on that conversation. We are coming right back with more Checkpoint AFK.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Hey, what's up? It's James.
And Robbie.
Hey, and it's Weird Beard.
And we're bringing you a brand new radio show called Checkpoint XP.
You don't have to be an expert, even though I am, and we're here to give you everything you need to know about the world of video games. Interviews from the biggest professionals and your everyday gamers, we've got you covered at Checkpoint XP.
Whether you're a professional player or somebody who hasn't played in a while, we have something for everybody.
Hang out with us at Checkpoint XP every single week on your radio.
Find out where we're playing in your hometown at our website, checkpointxp.com.
So if you're looking to have some fun and talk about video games,
we got the rundowns for things that matter to you.
Checkpoint XP,
your home for esports and gaming.
You got it that time.
Yes.
Nailed it.
Is Diamond Dust an energy drink or an RPG attack?
Diamond Dust. We're trying to go through and think. So, can I ask any questions about these energy drinks? Are they like well-known brands?
It's literally just the flavor. It doesn't say anything else about it.
I don't even know what the actual drink is. Like, yeah. I don't know what this flavor is. A subsidiary.
So you just got to off the dome, man.
Diamond Dust.
Best guess.
Diamond Dust. To me, that sounds like an RPG spell, so I'm going RPG.
Welcome back to Checkpoint AFK. We got our special guest, Brandon Braithwaite. You know him from the Grassroots Podcast, Cheddar Esports, and more. And right now, we're going to talk about the news of the week, which was the PS5 reveal. Guys, before we even dive deep into any of the details, what was your favorite announcement from this? We're going to start with you, Brandon.
My favorite announcement was the fact that I got memes out of the way that the PS5 looks. And Kena and Deathloop.
By the way, it's weird to me that they had two games in that announcement that used that same kind of mechanic of like the death loop stuff.
Yeah.
It's funny that it's now a thing. I think I'm more excited for Ratchet and Clank for like a killer platformer that hopefully won't, you know, just be marketed towards kids. You do that, I'm sold. I'm good. I'm in.
For me, Callie, I'm so torn between Resident Evil 8 and, Project Athia. I thought both of those looked super cool, but I mean, come on, it's got to be Spider-Man, right? Like,
you know what? It's. I'm really excited for Spider-Man. I think it was very interesting of them to lead the show with Spider-Man.
Yes, and especially not the same shitty Spider-Man that you've seen a million times. You know, they didn't just go, "Yo, it's the same thing. We know you idiots will buy it." Like.
They went in.
The last Spider-Man game like blew my mind. Like it was like, yes, this is like they took the Batman Arkham combat and gave it to a guy with the spider sense where it actually makes sense for him to have the spider sense. So I love it. And now I'm in Miles Morales. I'm super geeked for that. I'm super geeked that it's not just a continuation of the story we got in the last one. He's going to kind of be his own thing and he'll have sequels to his game as well. Yes, I'm super into it. I hope Carnage is the villain.
We've already had a Spider-Man game, because every Spider-Man game review in the past 50 years has had the same, this game makes you feel just like Spider-Man when you're playing it. Like, it's the tacky review line for any Spider-Man game. Right. Well, guess what? That's what the last Spider-Man game was. It was the ultimate, like, look,
you've now... It was the Spidey Sim.
Yeah, you felt like Spider-Man now. What's the review going to say on this next one? Like, I don't want to see it makes you feel like Spider-Man. They've got to give you a real... Like, what
it's
else?
It's like Spider-Verse.
You are Spider-Man now.
Yes. Yeah. Can I ask, though, on the Resident Evil 8 thing? This is two Resident Evil trailers in a row where they got me. I had no idea what the game was until the title card dropped at the end, because I remember watching that trailer for Resident Evil 7 and be like, okay, cool, we're kind of like in a swamp area. This is neat. There's monsters and stuff, like, because they showed off like some of the black ooze monsters and stuff. I'm like, yeah. All right, cool, a new survival horror game. Resident Evil 7. Holy crap, they look like made a good Resident Evil again? That's crazy. And then this one looked almost like... like Cthulhu-esque, like yeah. it was yeah. another weird. Yeah, it looked. It was another weird twist, and then they dropped. Like you're in this village, and you're like, okay, cool, another cool new survival horror IP. No, they got me again. It's Resident Evil 8. Oh,
I mean, I'm hyped for it too, Brandon. You were saying.
Oh no! I was gonna say, for me, like seeing Chris Redfield, that's when I was like, oh, I thought it was like some new like Silent Hill type of game. I was like, all right, cool. Silent Hill is going to the swamp now. Like, but nah, I guess not.
So can we talk about how Chris is getting bigger every time we see him? Because like in Resident Evil 1, Chris was like a regular shaped dude. And then in Resident Evil 5, he was like, he'd been like weightlifting for the last four games, and that's why we hadn't seen him.
In Resident Evil 6, he punches boulders. What are you talking about?
Well, no, that's what I mean. Then in Resident Evil 6, he's gotten even bigger. He's like a Goliath now. And now, like, in Resident Evil 8, we just see him, like, wearing that big blocky coat, hiding how huge he is. I hope he gets bigger in every scene that we see him in.
Yo, what if we find out that Chris Redfield low-key was injected with a small dose of the T-virus, and that is how he's been able to get swole throughout the years, and it's functioned like a hypersteroid, and Chris is now the villain leader of this village because the T-virus has finally warped his mind into, you know, becoming this, you know...
It's like Wesker in Rapture or something like that.
Based on the way the trailer ended, it almost feels like that. Like, the person didn't really seem very happy to see Chris. Like,
yeah.
So, I don't know, maybe.
Chris did not necessarily look like he was the good guy in this one, which would be an interesting twist. Although we see Chris at the end of 7, right? Like, he's the one who shows up with the Umbrella team, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I could believe maybe he's gone to the dark side.
The one thing that it's fueled is my fan theory that a Resident Evil 4 remake is being done, because there's no way that they make a bunch of castle assets like that and then just go, we're not going to do 4 as well. Like,
they're absolutely redoing it.
Yeah, they've remade 2, they've remade 3, 4 is next on the docket, baby.
Yeah,
absolutely.
They got to be careful with that, because like, so people loved 2, right? And it was old enough and janky enough that you could absolutely justify a remake. Not as many people loved 3. So, like, again, when they remade Nemesis, there's not a whole lot of people out there who are like, that was my game when I was a kid. No, 2 was your game, and you also played 3. So that one's justified. Okay, well, there's a lot of people out there who really loved 4 for the GameCube. Like, that was, like, the game. You got to be careful with this remake.
But listen, we said the same thing about the 7 remake, and they came out and kicked everybody in the chest with one of the best games of the past few years. Okay, these companies. What's happening is I feel like a lot of these old execs who were at the top in the 90s, who like either retired or are getting ready to retire, are finally like, wait a minute, this company has gotten away from our core ideals. We're about to make a fuck ton of money, release the old shit, because that's what made us famous. And so I feel like, you know, this whole wave of remakes and stuff is great in both hands, because the consumers love this stuff. And at the same time, it's making them money like never before. So I'm here for, if they remake 4, it would have to be like one of the worst games ever to be trash. How bad it has to be.
I just think Square Enix spent, you'll never convince me that they didn't start developing the FF7 remake for the PlayStation 3 and it just took them that long to finish it.
Sir,
I do not have the faith in Capcom to spend 10 years faithfully remaking Resident Evil 4.
Excuse me, Callie. the last four, the last three Final Fantasies are tech demos for the FF7 remake.
Correct.
Okay?
That's absolutely correct.
Yes, they have been making that game for 15 fucking years. But I want to move on from Resident Evil and from remakes. No, Rick, we're moving. All right. Anyway,
that's what I was going to ask. I want to know Brandon's opinion on something that's been bugging me. Mm-hmm. Why was the PlayStation reveal better received than the Xbox reveal? Like, the Xbox reveal got fucking trashed. It got made fun of. You know what I mean? Like, everybody was
by us.
So, yeah, everybody was up in arms because they said, oh, it's all, you know, it's look at this. We're going to give you play demo stuff. We're going to give you game footage. We're going to give you, like, all this. Sony didn't promise any of that, and they knocked it out of the park. What's the difference between the two?
That's the benefit of being the industry leader. At the end of the day, like, it was on Xbox to really, really, like, knock it out of the park. And they did well, but it's like they didn't show us anything that made us feel like, wow, like PlayStation actually has real competition. And now it's like PlayStation made the reveal, and it's like, okay, like, cool. They're pretty much exactly the same. PlayStation wins. Yay.
Good
like,
enough isn't industry- enough when you're in second place.
Yeah, exactly. They're the industry leader. So, of course, they're going to get, you know, the... Yeah, they're going to get the praise for just doing just mediocre.
And here's another thing, though, Rick, to that question where I think they were actually able to perform very well is the simple fact that Sony, first of all, didn't come out and make any promises about what this was. The only thing they said is PS5 reveal event. That was it. They didn't say shit else about it. So we went in completely in the dark, and that helps for not just driving hype. It sets expectations for people to say, I'm going to sit down, just show me what you got. Instead, what Xbox did was talk about all this great quote-unquote gameplay they were showing, and this is going to be the greatest thing ever. And they underwhelmed because they set the bar too high. Nobody asked them to do that shit or to say any of it. They were the ones who set their own bar too high. So that's number one. And I think number two, when it came to PlayStation, they basically took an E3 keynote and just made it a video. And you know what Xbox did was, unfortunately, and I think this is the detriment of going first. And I don't know why the fuck Microsoft keeps doing this. But when you're first, you have to set the tone, but you also set yourself up for being undercut. And what happened is that Sony had the time to make a full presentation with beautiful video, reach out to the developers, get them in a studio and get their audio beautiful and the lighting and everything is gorgeous and all these graphics. And Xbox, because of COVID, had to just get Zoom calls. And so that made the whole presentation just feel a little too common. And it's like, bro, We should all be in LA right now. Like, we're recording this on what is E3 weekend. We should all be in LA half drunk right now, flat out. But the thing is that Sony gave it that E3 feeling, and Microsoft simply didn't have the time to be able to do that. Man. Damn, got him.
Yeah, I'll say that was good. No, I just gotta be like, you say, like, we should all be in LA half drunk right now. And you know what? You say that. I just remember back to being at E3 a couple of years ago and being like, I don't think anyone here is sober. Everyone here is either drunk or hungover right now. Like, that is 100% of people at E3.
Well, let me ask another question. Did the presentation yesterday convince anybody who was going to buy an Xbox over a PlayStation to switch and buy the PlayStation over an Xbox now?
I personally don't think so. I think everyone's going to stay their lines because right now, I don't think anyone's seeing anything or feeling anything that's going to make them feel like the Switch is necessary. I think for me, I feel like if E3 did happen, it would have even still benefited PlayStation because now we would have got that controller in our hands, and that controller everyone keeps talking about that has haptic feedback, this, that. No one's feeling that yet, and it's something that Sony definitely, I feel like, we're really pushing, like, hey, this is the future. Like, the games look good. I'm not going to say anything about the way they looked. I think what PlayStation was probably trying to do with the PlayStation 5 is say, look at this controller, like, feel this controller. This is a new way to play a game because the way it feels, as opposed to how it looks.
Yeah, and they went even further as well, talking about the 3D audio capabilities of the console as well. And Sony really is thinking about it in terms of beyond just the graphical fidelity, because we've said many times on this show that the newest, hottest graphics making it beautiful is not the bar anymore. We know no matter what you buy, it's going to look good. So what else can you provide to me that is going to enhance my experience? And I think Sony is the only ones that are really beginning to answer that question in terms of creating something new that you really can't get on any other console. And so I agree with you, Brandon, that whoever is in, you know, whatever camp you're in, that's probably where you'll stay. But the problem is, then that means the PlayStation 5 is one of the best-selling consoles of all time, and Microsoft gets trounced once again.
I think
that's
too,
the problem.
Like one of the things that actually disappointed me about yesterday's announcement was they didn't show off what I thought was the one thing that this system is really going to have that's going to trump all other competitors. They didn't show off the SSD in any real meaningful way. Show me a game where you have the start screen and you press start and we're right into the game without a loading screen. That would have blown my mind. Show me someone get killed and reload, and the reload is instantaneous, and I don't have to worry about waiting 5 minutes for the game to load up the next scene. That's what's going to like be like the big step forward with this console, and you didn't show that ability at all.
Well, low-key, they did, but they didn't say that's what they were doing, because right. That is what the Ratchet and Clank gameplay demo was all about.
Yeah, jumping the in the dimensions.
Jumping in dimensions, the speed of being able to load the assets. And also with a game like Deathloop is not possible without the ability to instantaneously load yourself after you die. So a lot of these games are kind of already taking advantage of the system, but they didn't go out of their way to explain that. So I agree with that point. Lastly, we got to talk about the actual design and look of this thing. I'm going to be honest, man. It's polarizing. It's polarizing. People put out the memes and all that, but I'm going to be honest with you. And Jeff Keighley himself said this. Your Xbox Series X, you'll put it on your shelf in your entertainment system, and you're going to forget it's there. You're not going to be able to forget this look in this system. It is going to stand out amongst every other piece of tech you own, unless you own like a Alienware Aurora or something like that, or, you know, like a, you know, Netgear modem. But
I think it's worth noting, it's though, really, that we've had nothing but black rectangles out of Sony now for the past 20 years. And the one time they step away from the black rectangle, we've got now the Seto Kaiba jacket going on, the Netgear modem going on, as you put it, is the one time that Xbox is like, okay, and it is as black rectangle as you can possibly imagine. Like,
I mean, first of all, the OG PS3 was not a black rectangle. It was a black, shiny oblong.
It was a black rhombus.
Yes. Don't get it right.
Yeah. We've had the black rectangle, we've had the black oblong, and then we had the black parallelogram, and now we are on to the Seto Kaiba jacket. I'm into it.
But you look at a company like Nintendo, right? Even though the Switch it's not their next gen console, but it's going to be the one that's like in the discussion. You have to decide you're getting a Switch and either a PS5 or an Xbox, right?
Yeah.
But even they, the company that has the weird shit, right? The company that has like the Labo made out of cardboard boxes. What is the Switch? It's a black toaster, man. Like, mm-hmm. If you have black handles and controllers on the side of your Switch, that black box hides. It's not, you know, it just sits there. So I think PlayStation made a really smart move by knowing, like, all right, we got to go against the complete grain. Just make it white. Even if it was a white box, it would be different, I think, than everything else that's been coming out.
And you know what? And I hate to put it this way, but I also think that they've made this decision understanding that the demographics of video games are changing. Yeah. I think in its design, they have made a conscious choice to say that, yes, video gamers are not all black, hard angled edge lords, and they don't necessarily want that from their console.
Not anymore, anyway.
Not anymore. And as gaming grows, I think I look at that system from a design standpoint, and it looks more welcoming. It looks more inviting. It wants me to play it, as opposed to the Xbox, which looks like something out of Control that is going to float and throw sharp objects about my house.
Yep.
Well, here's flat the thing out. About, yeah, here's the thing actually about the Xbox that I remember. I remember when it first came out, people instantly said, oh, it looks like a PC. And I think that was, like, I don't know if that was the thinking that PlayStation had in mind, but the fact that, like, that's the first association that people had with the Xbox, the way it looks, it was a PC, even, like, further puts it out of the conversation of being a game console. Because yep. now, like, now that you're instantly comparing it to PC, and you already know a PC is better. So, like, it looks like a PC. It's supposed to play games that's better than a PC, but it doesn't. Like, why do I need this system? But, like, now you look at the PS5, like, design-wise, it's like, oh, okay, this is something interesting. Like, this looks like a toy, or it looks like something that we're going to be playing. It doesn't look like it's just a computer.
The Xbox is going to, if it holds up to its design philosophy there, it's going to turn into a Netflix machine. Honest to God, mm-hmm. that's how I think it's going to, you know what I mean? Like, people that have it are going to have it, and they'll have maybe a few games for it. But if you ask them, why do you turn it on, for the most part, they're going to say, to stream something. I don't know, yeah. to like turn on a streaming service. So I think, well, like you said, comparing it to a PC is, they're boned. Like, they are so far behind right now. It's sad.
I think the only way, and here's our, you know, last point for the day. I think the only way PS5 drops the ball on this is if both versions of the console are north of $600, you know, north of $550, up to $600. I think that's the only way they screw up this lead. If one of the versions of that console comes out at $499 or $399 even, It's a wrap. It's over.
Yeah,
at this point,
I'm thinking we're gonna see something along the lines of like $399 for bare bones digital version, $499 for with the disc tray, and then probably $599 with the controller and the headset bundled in. I'm guessing we're gonna see something like that. I could be plus or minus $100, but I don't think it's gonna be like the $799 that people were horrified about. So, and as long as they don't go north of like $600, I think they'll be fine.
It's a recession, bro. Like, I think, you know, again, because of this pandemic, I think both companies are painfully aware of what the market is probably going to look like moving into the holiday season. I think putting anything out at $600 that isn't a bundle, you know, crazy. If you're talking about $600 for the system, an extra controller in a game, or the system, a controller in a headset, totally different story, as opposed to bare bones, the system, and none of that extra bells and whistles. I think that would be a huge misstep.
Yeah, and again, I think for me, based on these two reveals, I don't really see anything right now that justifies even going past 600. I think PlayStation will have something once people get that control in their hand and actually start feeling things. But right now, like, nothing justifies going over 600. It seems like it's just a standard console. It looks better. It has better graphics. Cool. Like, I have a PC. I don't really need to go out and go buy a PS5 or Xbox One if that's all they're going to offer me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. But that's going to be our show for today. We want to thank Brandon for joining us on the show. And Brandon, if more people want to get in touch with you and, you know, find out where you're writing, find out who you're working with at the time, where can they find out any of that information?
You can go to twitter.com/writewellalways. That's WRITEWELL always.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us, Brandon. We had a blast with these conversations. So for myself, Norris Howard, Callie Sloan, and Weird Beer, that is this episode of Checkpoint AFK. We are out of here.
Country.com, your online home for all things country music.
Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.